So I want to start with something related to the Parsha and also actually Chanukah. We're continuing our discussion of halachic man this morning. And halachic man, I think people think he's limited in the sense that halachic man, what does he do? What governs his actions? Whatever it says in the Shulchan Aruch. If there's no basis for a certain idea in halacha, so then there's no reason to do it. Obviously, there's Lifnim Mishur Sadin, there's Kedoshim Tiyu, there are things like that. So it's not formally in the Shulchan Aruch in that sense, but those two are mitzvos. In other words, what governs the behavior of halachic man is entirely halacha. And while that's true to some degree, I think it's not exactly true as people see it. And I want to start with a piece from the beginning of the second part of halachic man. So in the English edition, that starts, the second part two starts on page 99. And I'm going to read it actually from the Hebrew, from Isha Halacha, because like many passages, you'll find the Hebrew is a lot easier than the English. And so I put just a little piece of the Hebrew also on your Makoro sheets. It's the same Makoro sheets as last time with additions. So you should make sure you have the new version, not the old version. So I'm going to read again. This is from where you'll see that little picture. Halacha ro'a b'chol ha'torah kula gufei dinim vikari halachos. The halacha sees in all parts of Torah dinim and halachos. Gam sipuri ha'torah ba'u l'kvoa halacha l'doros. So that's true even with the narrative portions of the Torah, with the stories. Yafas ichasen shel avdi avos mitorasen shel banim. Parshaso shel Eliezer. Shnayim v'shlosha dapim hu omra v'shona v'hasheretz migufei Torah v'ein damo metame kivsaro ela meriboy hamikra. So Chazal here are pointing out that we know that we learn halachos from even an extra letter, an extra word. We learn lots of halachos. And yet, when it comes to the stories, there's a lot of times great detail and even repetition, as in the story of Eliezer. And Chazal say, Yafa sichasan. So what's so yafa? The pshat is that we are meant to learn from those stories. Those stories aren't just tales. They are halacha. Ein b'torasenu af os achas oniv echad levatal. There's not a single letter that is unnecessary. B'chol tag v'tag, even the tagin, gufei Torah tzluyim. Uvachol os v'os, masmeros netuim shal halacha l'mayis l'doros. So even despite the great lengthiness in the story of Eliezer, it doesn't mean that there's anything unnecessary. Adrabba, just like we're meant to learn from every letter of the halachic portions, we're meant to learn halacha l'mayis from every letter of the story. The nature of that learning is different. That's why it can't be so bekitzer. An added vav in a story is not the same thing as an added vav in a halachic portion. But the point is that the stories are meant to teach us how to live just as the halachos are. Me bereshis bara ad hachasima mileya ugedusha hi chukim umishpatim, mitzvos v'dinim. Chachmei asod, roem b'toraseinu, remazim v'raze olam, chidos v'talumos kol chai, nistaros ma'asei merkava u'ma'asei bereshis. And what he's going to continue is, halachic man doesn't look at these stories, let's say, the beginning of Bereshis, as something that's there to teach us the mystical secrets of the world. That's not halach l'maisa. It's there to teach us something that's halach l'maisa. So let's try to elaborate upon this a little bit, and we'll see actually how it explains a fascinating parsha in our Sedra. So what is he saying? Halacha does govern everything. You need a makor in halacha. We don't just do things because there's an inyan to do them or because they make us feel spiritual. So in that sense, halachic man is, his sources are narrower. But at the same time, it's actually much more broad because Kol HaTorah Kula is his Shulchan Aruch. So let's give the example he just said, the first parak of Bereishis. What does the first parak of Bereishis teach us? We talked about this actually about a month ago when it was Parshas Bereishis, okay, 2 months ago. And we talked about that. What is the purpose of the first parak of Bereishis? So what did we see? We saw that Mikubalim see parak Aleph of Bereishis as full of esoteric secrets, of Maisa Bereishis. We saw how the philosopher looks at Maisa Bereishis as well in terms of a source for esoteric ideas. We saw that in the Ramban and the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim. Not so, halachic man. He turns to it for guidance. It's actually very similar to many of the ideas you'll see in Bereishis Perek Aleph and Perish Rashi. Rashi's always learning sort of ethical teachings and normative teachings from the first parak. So to put it a little differently, for something to be a mitzvah, it doesn't need a tzivoy. Mitzvahs are not limited to when the pasuk says you must do this or you shouldn't do this. What we need to know is this is what Hashem wants. And how do we know what Hashem wants? We look to the Torah as a mashal. We even have mitzvahs without a tzivoy. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, according to the Rambam, is a tzivoy. It's the mitzvah of emuna, or yediyah, as the Rambam puts it in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah Perek Aleph. There's no formal tzivoy. It doesn't say you must believe, but that's not necessary. Likewise, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is a mitzvah, the mitzvah of Achdus Hashem. That's not the mitzvah of reciting Shema. That's a separate mitzvah that's derived from a different pasuk. The mitzvah of Shema is the belief in or the knowledge of Achdus Hashem. There's no tzivoy, but you don't need a tzivoy. If it's in the Torah, it's a mitzvah. And this, I think, idea explains a very troubling aspect of our parsha. So the question I think everybody wonders when they read this week's Sedra is why does Yosef torture his brothers? So clearly it's not revenge. For one thing, that would be heinous. Two, it's not consistent with the emotions that you see Yosef experience. Why would he show so much emotion and sadness? Why does he have to retreat to another room to cry? There's clearly, this isn't revenge. There's not anger. And that's in fact why, as soon as he does reveal himself, he tells them that he's totally forgiven at them. He says, Atachas Elokim Anochi. You know, he tells them, don't be sad. Hashem sent me here. He kisses them. He gives them gifts. So if it's not revenge, so what exactly is Yosef doing in our parsha? What is he trying to accomplish? So the Ramban answers that, and that's you have here on the next source where it says Ramban. Kiyomar akasav kibir os Yosef esachav mishtachavim lo zachar kol achalomos, like the pasuk says vayiskar achalomos asher chalam lahem the yada shalom niskaim echad mehem befamazos. Unlike Rashi, he remembers the dreams, but he also takes note that the dreams haven't been fulfilled yet. Why? Because they're only 10 brothers bowing to him. And in the dreams, there are 11. Valkain, lo ratza lahagid lahem, ani Yosef achicha. Really, he would have been very happy to tell them right away, I am Yosef, immediately. But he couldn't. Why? Because Yosef had to ensure the fulfillment of the dreams. And before he could work on the second dream, he needed to work on the first dream. And the first dream needed 11 brothers to bow. V'leimor, so he couldn't say V'leimor ma'aru v'alu el aviv ishlach ha'galos kasher asayman b'pam ha'shnia, which is what he did to allow for the second dream. Ki haya aviv ba miyad b'lo safek. Surely he could have skipped that whole story. And that's why after the first dream is fulfilled, then he starts working on the second dream. V'lulei kein, if this was not the motivation of Yosef, Haya Yosef chote chet gadol, letza'er es aviv, ulamido yamim rabim, b'shikul ve'evel al shemon ve'alav. Yosef would have done a terrible sin by torturing his father and making him wait in this state of worry about him, about Shimon, all this additional time. Even if he wanted to cause some type of pain to his brothers, let them know how he felt. Eich lo yachmal al sevas aviv. How could he not have compassion on his father? Aval kol asa yafe beito l'kaim achalomos ki yada shiskaimu be'emes. No, Yosef did the right thing because he was motivated to fulfill the dream. And this is, of course, also the reason why Yosef did not tell Yaakov all this time that he was in Mitzrayim. Why didn't he send him a letter? Answer, because he knew that this would be necessary to fulfill the dreams. Now, this idea, the Ramban, is a pella, because why was this Yosef's responsibility? Yosef saw the dreams. Okay, good. So let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care of it. Why is it Yosef's achrayus? And even if you say, okay, there's nothing wrong with trying, but Meichatesi, he was allowed to torture his father to be mekayim these dreams. And Taka, the Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Avraham, asks that question on the Ramban. He says, it's not our responsibility. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care of his own stuff. But the Ramban is saying, no. Ramban is saying that if we know that this is what Hashem wants, and Yosef understood that his dreams were prophetic, so it becomes his achrayus to do it. The Gaon in the next source makes this point explicitly. In other words, Yosef wants to be mekayim ratzon Hashem. So this is a very important rule in Torah. The Netziv also writes this along similar lines. There's another issue which we don't have time to talk about now, which is when was the second dream fulfilled, and also why, even after all 11 brothers bow, does he have to do the story with the goblet? But we'll leave that for now. This is an idea, actually, that the Ramban has in a number of places. I could think of another three places where the Ramban has this idea. I'll just mention one other, because it makes the point very powerfully as well. So the Ramban, very famously in Hilchos Tshuva, asks, how is it that the Egyptians were punished for persecuting the Jewish people if HaKadosh Baruch Hu already told Avram Avinu, ki ger yazarecha ve'eretz lohem v'abadum v'inu osam arba me'o shana? So the Rambam's answer is that no particular Egyptian had to sin, had to enslave the Jewish people, and it could have happened without in each individual Mitzri doing it, and therefore the Mitzri who decides to do it is doing something evil and wicked. The Ravid, as well as the Ramban, ask on the Rambam, well, if that's the case, so how is the Gzera going to be Mekoyim anyway? In other words, somebody's got to do it. Now, I think Rambam actually answers that, addresses that, but we'll leave aside the Rambam for now and consider what's the answer of the Ramban and also the Ravid. And the Ramban says that had the Egyptians actually listened to the prophecy. Now, whether they knew about the prophecy or not is an interesting question, but let's imagine they did. Let's imagine they overheard the Bris Bein HaBesarim, and they go ahead and they say, oh, the Jewish people are supposed to be enslaved. Let's do it. And they go and they enslave the Jewish people. Then in Achinami, what they would have done was correct, not just correct, but a mitzvah. But that's not what happened. Instead, they went further than that which the Nevuah said. Didn't say anything about killing the boys. Instead, and moreover, when Hashem said to let them go, they didn't listen. And so they showed they weren't acting L'shem Shemayim, and that's why they were held accountable. But the point is, what's this remarkable Chiddush, is that had they decided to enslave the Jewish people, L'shem Shemayim, then it would have been a mitzvah. And again, we have to ask, Mechtesi, nobody told them, right? So they knew the Bris Bein HaBesarim. Hashem, if Hashem said, go enslave the Jewish people, we'd understand why it's right for them to enslave the Jewish people. But Hashem didn't tell them. So just because they happened to overhear the Bris Bein HaBesarim, why would that justify it? The answer is, like we saw in the case of Yosef, if somebody knows Ratzon Hashem, now obviously you have to know Ratzon Hashem. And that's why without prophecy, this is rarely relevant halacha l'maisa. But if you know Ratzon Hashem, then it becomes the right thing to do to do whatever you can to carry it out, even if that involves doing something that would, under other circumstances, be wrong and immoral, like enslavement or like Yosef's causing pain to his father. Let's take a look at how the Ramban puts this. This is from Bereishis Tezvav, the next source. So here he's just explaining the shaila in the first place, saying, obviously, if I kill someone, I'm chayv misa, and I can't say, oh well, if he died, obviously on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem said that he should die. It's true, Hashem was gozer alav to die on Rosh Hashanah. Fine, but that doesn't exonerate me because I didn't know that. Aval kasher hagzera al pi nafi. If you do it l'shem shamayim, kenigzar ein alav chait aval yesh lo schus. And he brings an example to this from Yehu, and that would be true for the mitzvah as well. Aval shama mitzvah havaharag oso l'sino l'shlo lo so. Like in the case of the mitzvah weren't enslaving the Jewish people and murdering them l'shem shamayim. They were doing it because of their hatred. So then yesh alav ha'onesh kihu. Good. So this is mamish what the Rav writes over here in Halachic Man. And I always thought that this is the makor for what the Rav writes in Halachic Man. Turn again. We'll just read it in English this time to page 100. Halachic Man discerns in every divine pledge man's obligation to bring about its fulfillment. In every promise, a specific norm. In every eschatological vision, an everlasting commandment, meaning the commandment to participate in the realization of the prophecy, right? Sometimes people talk about, oh, we should do things to bring Mashiach. Mechatesi. Why is that a mitzvah? Answer is, that's Ratzon Hashem, so we have to do it. We can't be a kind of Ratzon Hashem. That doesn't mean we could do an Aveira to bring about the coming of Mashiach, but that's what the Rav is writing. In other words, if we know, in the case of our parsha, if Yosef knew that Hashem wanted his brothers to bow to him, then Yosef sees that as a mitzvah to do what he can to carry it out. And that is how Halachic Man views every portion of the Torah. He looks at Bereishis Perek Aleph and he says, what's the halacha l'maisa from here? So everything needs a makor, but all parts of Torah could serve as a makor. Now, the flip side of this is that if it doesn't have a makor, then there's no place for it. And this relates to Halachic Man's objection to ceremonialism, to unsourced rituals. We need a source for it. So should we have a Hanukkah party? Good question. So we need a look. Is there a mitzvah of Simchan Hanukkah? We have the Rama, the concept of Chanukah Samizbeach. We have the Rambam, who seems to make up a concept of Simcha. So we need to figure out where the Rambam get it from. It's not like the Rama. What's his source? We're not going to talk about Hanukkah parties now, but we need a makor. And that's partially one of the reasons why the Rav was so into looking for makoros for minhagim. And it relates, like I said, to Halachic Man's objection to ceremonialism, to unsourced rituals. I'll just mention here right now one interesting manifestation as well, just because this is a smicha class. So we could ask, what is smicha? The Rav fought to keep Rietz a yeshiva and not what he called a rabbinical factory. He had some German word for that. Something which actually has a lot of implications to how we're supposed to experience yeshiva. It's meant to be a yeshiva, not a rabbinical factory. Though I guess that's for another conversation. The Rav over here even wondered what our version of smicha really is, because obviously what we call smicha isn't real smicha. I'll just give you a short snippet which reflects this, and then we'll get back to our discussion of Halachic Man. But as I said, it really relates to Halachic Man very powerfully. So in case all of you are wondering what exactly you're going for with smicha, you're not the only ones to wonder about this. The Rav wondered about it as well. In what respect does the rabbi differ from the rest of the community? There's not a single norm which is applicable only to the rabbi and not applicable to balabatim or layman, right? There's no chalais to being a rav. There's no nafkamina. As for the number of mitzvos that one is obligated to perform, there's no distinction between the rabbi and the layperson. There's not a single mitzvah which is applicable exclusively to the rabbi and has no application to the layman. I do not know of any such mitzvah. As you all know, I am descendant from a rabbinic family. Indeed, it is difficult to find a layman among my ancestors on either side for the last century and a half. On both my paternal and maternal sides, they were all rabbis. If you should ask me what the rabbinate stands for, I cannot give you an answer. What is a rabbi? I do not know. The question comes out quite often since we ordain rabbis at yeshiva. Every year, 30 to 40 boys receive smicha. I signed these certificates of ordination. I've signed about 1,500 or 1,600 ordinations over the years. I only hope that I don't receive malchus for each ordination that I granted. So it's something to think about. What does smicha mean? Now, obviously, he did believe that there's value in Rabbanim, and he believed that there's value in granting smicha, otherwise he wouldn't have done it. But it's a question that you need to think about. And now's not the time to think about it. We're going to go back to halachic man, but I think it brings up a very important point, right? Everything needs a makor. So on the one hand, halachic man's sources are very broad. Every part of Torah is Shulchan Aruch. It could be a makor. But at the same time, it needs a makor. So, yes, Akiva.
As opposed to saying this is him looking for a makor, could it be that he's just responding to some, like the Hasidish view of the Rebbe and the Tzaddik?
Yeah, we're going to get
that there.
There
really is no difference.
Well, yes, of course that's what he's responding to. But yes, that's obviously what he's referring to, among other things, not just that. He's coming lafuke that. He's coming lafuke that rabbinate in Israel, which he spoke very strongly against because it turned the rabbinate into an institution. He was coming against the rabbinate in America, especially in reform and conservative circles, but even in orthodox circles where it became very ceremonial. He's coming lafuke many things, but they're all the same. They're all the same point. There's no place for that for halachic man. There's no basis. Yes, Chaim.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago, we were saying that the rub that halachic man sees like Kabbalah and philosophy as just not as direct sources of Ratzon Hashem, even though they're legitimate. But if they're legitimate, then why would he not factor them in?
Illegitimate. He doesn't reject them, but they're of no interest to him. We'll see more about that a little bit today. We'll explain. We're gonna actually start with that point, and try to understand better what he see, how halachic man looks at Kabbalah. So let's actually start with that exact point, and for that matter, philosophy. So, who is halachic man? Again, just to review from the very first sentence of the Sefer, halachic man reflects two opposing selves. Two disparate images are embodied within his soul and his spirit. So halachic man is contrasted with two other people, ish hadas, or religious, ish hadas, religious man, homo religiosus, and also ish hadas, cognitive man, the scientist and the like. And again, let's continue with the second sentence, and now we'll elaborate. On the one hand, he is as far removed from homo religiosus as East is from West, and is identical in many respects to the prosaic cognitive man. On the other hand, he's a man of God, possessor of an ontological approach that is devoted to God, and a worldview saturated with the radiance of the divine presence. For this reason, it is difficult to analyze halachic man's religious consciousness by applying the terms and traits that descriptive psychology and modern philosophy of religion have used to characterize the religious personality. And that's why what he's going to do over here is, in order to really help depict what halachic man is, he's going to use these foils, and primarily homo religiosus, the religious man. So both religious man and halachic man have to deal with this world, but they do so differently. Cognitive man, when he sees this world, he tries to understand, organize, conquer. Again, sort of similar, though not identical to Adam 1, as we mentioned last time in Lonely Man of Faith. When religious man sees the world, he's awed by its mystery. He's overwhelmed by his inability to fully understand. He realizes that there's so much more to understand that he can't understand. Kadosh Baruch Hu's megalat tefach u'mechaset tefachayim. Now, what about, let's just read a little bit. Again, I think we read this last time. So let's talk about this outside for a bit. So aspects of homo religiosus, as we might have alluded to last time, are Christian, but to a large degree, homo religiosus, religious man, is a Jewish perspective, and one which was adopted by many of our greatest thinkers. So in rejecting homo religiosus, halachic man is not saying homo religiosus is bad, but it's not his mahalik. So who is homo religiosus? Homo religiosus is a spiritual person who tries to transcend this world. And I think to better appreciate who he is, I'd like to look at some mekoros which describe him in a very positive sense. And so we're going to read first from Tanya, then we're going to read from Mesil Susharim, then we're going to read from Chovos HaLevavos, and then we're going to read from the Rambam. And all of them are describing homo religiosus. And all of these visions that they set up are contrasted with halachic man. So we're going to start from Shar Yichud V'Emuna, that's from the Alter Rebbe, and we're going to read from Perek Gimel. It's the second section of Tanya. And again, let's follow along in Merkavos. V'hinei acharei dvarim va'emes ha'eila. Kol maskil al davar yavin l'ishuro. Eich shekol nivra v'yesh. Hu be'emes nechshav la'ayin ve'efes mamish l'gabe koach ha'poel v'ruach piv shebenif'al. Ha'mehave oso tamid umotzi o mi'ayin mamish l'yesh. So the Alter Rebbe here is explaining that we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, yesh me'ayin. That's not just a historical event that happened once, but it's something that's happening constantly and all the time. Meaning to say, if there's not one moment where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly creating the world would cease to exist. Mechadish betuva b'chol yom tamid ma'asiv reishis mamish. Constantly being created me'ayin v'yesh. And what's sustaining it at every moment is this breath from the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's continuously calling it into existence. Uma shekol nivra v'nifal nira lanu liyesh uma masha. So even though we don't perceive the world this way, when I look at the world, I see things that actually exist. I see people, I see chairs, I see tables. When I bang on the table, I feel resistance. We perceive things as actually existing. Zeu mach mashein anu masigim v'roim be'enei basar es koach Hashem v'ruach piv shebenivra. That's because we don't perceive the true existence of these entities. In other words, this table is existing because of the ruach piv of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly being mahavet. I don't perceive that, so I perceive a table that exists. Aval ilu nitna rushos la'ayin liros u'lahasig. If the eyes were given permission to actually perceive this reality, ulhasig es hachiyos v'haruchnios shebuchal nivra hashofeya bo mimotzei pi Hashem v'ruach piv lo haya gashmios hanivra v'chomro u'mamasho nivra klal. Then you wouldn't actually see the gashmios le'enenu. Ki u'botol b'mitzius mamish l'gabe hachiyos v'haruchnios shebo would be totally negated to the Ruchnia Shebo, which is the true source of its existence. Me'achar, shemi biladei ha-Ruchnius, haya'ayin v'ya'efes mamish. Were not for that Ruchnius dika constant koach, it would be nothing. K'mol kodem sheshes me'bereishes, mamish. V'ha-Ruchnius ha-shofei alav, mimotei pi Hashem v'ruach piv, hu levado ha-motzio tamid me'efes v'ayin li'esh, u'me'avel so. Imkein efes bilado be'emes. So what's causing it to constantly exist? The Ruach Hashem. In fact, there's a famous story about the Alter Rebbe. At the end of his life, he said to those around him, you know, when you look up, you see a ceiling. When I look up, I see the Dvar Hashem. And even though he says, if the eyes were given permission to see, the eyes were not given permission to see, what he's saying is that this is something we should seek. The whole purpose of that sefer, Shayich Vemuna, is to teach a person the adata yam vashivot alavadacha, that it not just be intellectual knowledge, but we internalize this thing that there's nothing that exists besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ein od milvado mamish. And to stop looking at the world as tables and chairs and people, but to rather perceive the truth, which is that they're just the Dvar Hashem. Now is not the time to really get into it, but I want to just highlight the Chiddush here. If you look at Perek Aleph of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, the Rambam writes that Ein Od Milvado means that there is no independent reality besides God. If God were not to exist, then nothing else would exist. Meaning to say, as the Rambam puts it, all other existences are dependent, whereas God's existence is independent, or all other existences are accidental. They happen to exist. They don't need to exist. They don't exist in all possible worlds. Whereas God's existence is a necessary existence. If everything else would stop existing, God would continue to exist. But if God were to not exist, nothing else could exist. And that's what we mean when we say, Hashem Elokim Emes, that only God is a necessary truth, meaning say it has to be that way. And the Rambam writes, that's what it means when we say, Ein Od Milvado. What does Ein Od Milvado mean? Ein Od Milvado means there's nothing that necessarily exists besides God. Another time we could try to elaborate on that Rambam. But that's the way the Rambam says. Now there's a Rambam is saying, Ein Od Milvado doesn't mean we don't exist. Ein Od Milvado means we don't necessarily exist. We happen to exist, but we don't have to exist. So the Rambam certainly says, my existence is different than God's existence, but I do exist. That's what the Rambam writes. And as you can read it right over here in the next passage with the vowels. The Alter Rebbe is saying something very different. He is saying that reality that we see is a mirage. He compares it to a mirror. It's like right now I'm looking at your faces on my Zoom screen. I'm not looking at you. I might think I'm looking at you if I didn't know better, but I'm not. And in a sense, when you look at reality, the table that I see in front of me is actually really like the image of a table in a mirror. It's not real. Now, I don't think the Alter Rebbe is saying we don't exist. I think he does. He presents a sort of a paradoxical approach here. And we don't have time to explain it. But I'll say this. The whole time you're learning Tanya, you're wondering, did the Alter Rebbe think that I exist? And he embraces this sort of paradox that we do exist, but we don't. We can't really understand how. Again, another time we could learn Tanya together if you're interested. But what's relevant for us is, first of all, in the Rambam, you never have any doubts about that. But B, this is a reflection of the desire for transcendence that homo religiosus has. Homo religiosus seeks to leave this world. Now, he can't really leave the world. He's tethered to the world. But he seeks to leave the world. He's shayach to the esoteric. And moreover, even in this world, he denies the existence of the world. He says, the world that I think I'm seeing, doesn't actually exist as I perceive it. So he denies the existence of the world. He tries to transcend the world in other ways. Another manifestation is asceticism. Another manifestation of this is devaluing anything that's physical. The idea that if I take anything in Olam Hazeh, I'm by definition taking away from Olam Haba. The idea that pleasures should be avoided to the extent possible. People think that the concept of asceticism maybe is not the mainstream Judaism. It's, you know, Hasidei Ashkenaz. It's some weird thing. It's Christian, whatever. But that's not really true. Again, it's not the same as Christianity, and it's not even the same as Hasidei Ashkenaz. But just for an example, take a look at Shulchan Aruch, right? Mainstream Judaism. We're going to read from Shulchan Aruch. This is from our Chaim Siman Reish Mem, same idea also appears in Evan Ezer, about how a person should conduct themselves during Tashmish Hamita. V'af kshu matzui etzla, even when one is with his wife, lo yechavim la'naso, ela ka'adam sheporeach ova, shu chayev be'onasa, l'kai mitzvah zboro, shilo banim oskim ha'torah, l'kai mitzvah z'Yisrael. So he shouldn't try to get hana, his kavana should be yiraon chov. V'yishamish be'im v'yira, v'ashkaz rabbi lazer, shay magal tefach u'mechase tefach, v'domek misha kafo sheid, peirash be'ima u'v'yira ki'ilu kafo sheid. Yesh mefarshim, he gives different interpretations of mecha megala u'mechase sov. Megala tefach u'mechase tefach means shalaya memari ka'ever b'shas tashmish k'de l'mayit hana'aso, doing acts to minimize. Make sure you don't get hana, or at least memayit. V'domek v'yishvo sheid shaso hadavar ba'onis. Yesh mefarshim megala tefach shebi'isha. Kolomar, achshav megala osa l'tzarach tashmish v'achshav mechase osa. Okay. We're not going to go through this, and it might be that this is not halacha lemaisa for almost anybody nowadays. But, and I'm not bringing it in to tell people this is what they should do. I'm sure those who are married had a chasen shmuz about what how to relate to this section of Shulchan Aruch, and if you're not yet married, so you will be'ezus Hashem. But the point that's relevant for us is just a certain perspective on Olam Hazeh that is coming across over here. The homo religiosus is longing for the supernal. Olam Hazeh is a place, it is obviously Makom Avoda, but basically it's a world of distractions. And it's here only to get you to where you're supposed to get. Tzeicha Timtza, to Olam Haba, take a look. Next source, the very beginning of Mesil Sesharim, Perek Aleph, something that everyone here probably knows by heart, but perhaps you didn't really think about it in this context. Yisod HaChasidus Veshor Shavoda Tmima, who, she's Bar V'Yis'amis Eitzel HaAdam, Machovaso Be'olamo, Ulema Tzarech Sheyasem Mabato U'Magamaso B'chol Asher Hu Amal Kol Yamav. So what are we supposed to put everything into? Hine, Ma She'arunu Chachaminu Zechonam Livracha Hu, She'adam Lo Nivra El Lasanig Al Hashem, So we are created, l'hisaneg al Hashem, tainug. And where is that tainug? Olam haba. And what are we doing over here to get there? U'kshemistakel b'davar tireh, ki ha'shleimus amiti hu rak ha'dveikos bo yisbarach. V'hu ma shahaya David HaMelech omer, v'ani kirvas alukim litov. V'omer acha sha'alti meis Hashem osav ha'kei, shivti veis Hashem kol yimei chayai. V'gomer. Ki rak ze hu atov. This is fascinating. What is David HaMelech's dream, shivti veis Hashem kol yimei chayai? What's beis Hashem? Olam haba. V'chol zula ze she'achshavu b'nei adam l'tov. Everything else that you think is good, einu ela hevel v'shav nita. It's garnished. So we're in this world. And what is this world? It's full of distancers. Again, like the Alter Rebbe, this is very different, as we'll see, from the perspective of halachic man. One other very famous sefer that I think reflects this in a different way as well, but along similar lines, somebody named Levi Goldman has pointed this out to me after the previous year, from Cholos Alvavos. Take a look. This is from Shar Vodas Elokim, Perek Beis. The Hirkev Aboris Ala B'Nefesh Adam Od Midos V'Kochos, Yachsef Bahem El Dvarim Kasheshtamish Bahem Yim As Ba'amidaso Ba'olamazah the Yachvot Liparid Mimenu Vihi Hakara Shleima. So what are we looking to do? We are despising Olam Hazeh and seeking to separate from it and leave. Obviously, it doesn't mean we're supposed to commit suicide, but it means that the because the deepest desire of homo religiosus is to transcend the world. So Mimela, this world is mos. This world is just full of distractions and the pleasures of this world as well. So what's the avoda? To get away from them. Again, Beine matridim machshav tamayin ba lefi kein mitoch zilzul ba'olam hazeh uvechol inyanav. Where mizalzal ba'olam hazeh. Again, from the next one. Lefikach nafsham mita'eves es ha'olam v'chol chafatzav u'mishtokekes la'olam ha'achris. What's he doing? He's desiring olam haba. Tzofim el hamaves. They long for death. Ve'em b'charada likraso. Now, they're afraid of it also. And again, but now, you know, we've been talking about homo religiosus. We saw the Alter Rebbe. We saw Seil Shisharim, Samchos Favos. But it's Rambam as well. The Rambam, though in a slightly different way, as we saw at the beginning of the year, says that the highest madrega, remember when we learned Mardivuchim, Chel Kimmel, Perknon Aleph, the highest madrega, the madrega that Avos and Amosh achieved, is some type of mystical union with God that happens after you disengage with this world and focus entirely on the spiritual. These tzaddikim were people that were constantly thinking about God, even when they're engaged in Olam Hazeh. And he talked about this great leap. How do you make this leap? You concentrate all of your thoughts on God. And what's the goal? Again, this union. The Rambam's Lashon, in translation into Hebrew, Bisbodidus uvehisyachados. You're misyached with Hashem. And just take a look a little bit from the Rambam we'll read here, describing the Madrega of the Avos. This is again from Chel Gimel Perek Nun Aleph. Vezos gamke Madregas Avos. Asher yigia kirvasam el Hashem Yisborach ad shenoda shemo lam ba'olam. Okay, Avraham Elokei Yitzchak Yaakov. Zeh shmi li'olam. Vigia hamis me his ached de osam ba'asagaso. Their mind merged with God in terms of Yediyas Hashem, Shekars im kol echad mehem bris kayemes, Zacharti es bris Yankov, ki elu harba, Ratzolomar avos Moshe Rabbeinu, Hizbar bahem min hais achdus b'Hashem, Ratzolomar sagasu v'avaso. And again, we saw over here that the Rambam writes, that's why you have to be so careful about disengaging from God, because the moment you disengage from God, your chibur to HaKadosh Baruch Hu weakens, your connection weakens, your hashgacha weakens, you're subject to certain forms of mikra. And though it's true, you have to engage in business, but even when you're engaging in business, to the extent possible, you try to maintain that chibur. So, again, just by contrast, cognitive set man says, I don't see any of this stuff, this spiritual stuff, this mystical stuff. Mechatesi, it exists. Anything, cognitive man says, if I can't see it, I don't believe in it. I can't detect it. If scientific tools don't tell me that it exists, then I don't believe it exists. And as we talked about earlier in the year, the Ramban critiques this approach. He says, this is the approach of Aristotle, who denied things he can't sense, and there's arrogance there, because it assumes that I'm able to find anything. If I can't see it, my senses are so good that if I don't see it, it doesn't exist. That's arrogant. Religious man tries to just transcend it. So again, he still lives in this world. The difference between, and just a point, this is so fascinating, right? Where did I put this? I'll get back to it in a second. And I know, Seth, you have a question. Let me just finish this point, then I'll take a question. There's two ways to relate to this world, and halachic man rejects both of them. Cognitive man sees only this world. Homo religiosus tries to transcend this world, tries to deny its existence. Halachic man rejects both of them. So let's read some of this inside. Take a look at page 40. The only difference between homo religiosus and halachic man change of corset. They travel in opposite directions. Homoreligiosus starts off in this world and ends up in supernal realms, like we said before. He tries to leave this world to the extent that he can. And we said before, cognitive man doesn't believe in anything besides this world. Halachic man is the opposite of homoreligiosus. Halachic man starts off in the supernal realm and ends up in this world. Halachic man balances this worldly spirituality with his commitment to the ideal and attention to the real. And this is, I think, the key line here. Take a look, page 32. The halacha is not at all concerned with the transcendental world. The world to come is a tranquil, quiet world that is wholly good, wholly everlasting, and wholly internal, wherein a man will receive the reward for the commandments which he performed in this world. However, the receiving of reward is not a religious act, and therefore halachic man prefers the real world to a transcendent existence, because here, in this world, man is given the opportunity to create, to act, to accomplish, while there, in Olam Haba, he's powerless to change anything at all. I think halachic man's worldview emerges from Avos Perek Dalet. Huaya Omer, Yafesha Achas B'tshuva Maisim Tovim Mikol Ba'olam Hazeh Mikol Chayei Ha'olam Haba. Yafesha Achas Shal Karas Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chayolam Hazeh. In terms of Karas Ruach, Olam Haba is nothing like Olam Hazeh. All the pleasures of this world don't compare to one moment of Olam Haba. But, that notwithstanding, why? Because we're powerless in Olam Haba. It's tranquil, it's quiet, it's geshmak, but can't do anything. Despite the pleasure of Olam Haba, it doesn't compare to this world. Famous stories about the grub at this point, about happily giving up all of Olam Haba to do a single mitzvah. There's drashos at the end of Nefesh HaChaim, and at least the brown versions of Nefesh HaChaim from Reb Chaim Volozhiner. And he's talking about tshuva, and he's talking about the Gaon's approach to tshuva and Yom Noraim, and his fear of death. And, you know, you tell him, but Vilna Gaon, you're going to go to Olam Haba. And he would say, what importance does Olam Haba have? You can't do Avodas Hashem there. And that relates to the lengthy discussion in Halachic Man about Halachic Man's fear of death and how he addresses it through, again, turning to Torah for learning Maseches Olos. So if we think about it this way, David HaMelech says, Acha sha'alti meis Hashem osava ke shivti b'veis Hashem kol yimei chayai lachsos b'noam Hashem uvake b'chala. Where is that? Where is that? So for homoreligiosus, that's Olam Haba. For halachic man, that's the base medrash. In this sense, actually, the Rambam, even in Hilchos Tshuva, is somewhat more like homoreligiosus. Take a look at Hilchos Tshuva over here, Perek Ches Halacha Zayin. Kama kamed David v'hisav elokhe Olam Haba. How much did David long for Olam Haba? Shenemar lulei hamanti l'ros b'tuv Hashem b'etz chayim. Now, again, first of all, it's very important to state that we don't have time to explain this now. Longing for Olam Haba doesn't mean being motivated by Olam Haba. Being motivated by Olam Haba is being Obed Hashem Shelo Lishma, as the Rambam writes in Perek Yud of Hilchos Tshuva. Longing for Olam Haba, what the Rambam is describing over here, means desiring to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to achieve that closeness, which is impossible in this world. Halachic man is not interested in this. Halachic man wants to do mitzvos. And we could only do those here. So he doesn't seek to transcend this world. Adarabba, he takes the supernal realm and he brings it into Olam Hazeh. Halachic man and homoreligiosus are going in opposite directions. Homoreligiosus is trying to leave this world through doing mitzvos. Halachic man is trying to do mitzvos, and therefore he longs for this world. And this relates halacha l'maisa to how you look at mitzvahs. Take a look at page 60. The halacha does not require any of us any mystical esoteric intentions directed towards a mundus absconditus, a hidden world, but only the clear, plain thought to fulfill via this particular act, such a mitzvah. Right? What does halachic man think when he's doing a mitzvah? L'shem mitzvah. Cognitive man, the materialist, acknowledges the physical world. Homo religiosus, the dualist, recognizes both the material world and the spiritual world, but sees them in contrast. He wants to flee one towards the other. Halachic man cannot accept either perspective. Let's go back again to page 41. Halachic man differs from homo religiosus, who rebels against the rule of reality and seeks a refuge in a supernal realm, from cognitive man, who does not encounter any transcendence at all. Halachic man apprehends transcendence. However, instead of rising up to it, he tries to bring it down to him. Rather than raising the lower realm to the higher realm, halachic man brings down the higher realm to the lower realm. And that's why he rejects both. Obviously, halachic man rejects cognitive man because he believes that there is this spiritual realm. But he also rejects the idea that to achieve that spirituality, we have to ascend to heaven. We're not seeking transcendence. Now, this brings us to the main point that I wanted to say today, which is almost out of time. But so I'm going to take your question and then I'll at least begin this point. I think when we read Halachic Man, we will see that there are three reasons why he objects to homo religiosus. What is wrong with seeking transcendence? Because after all, the idea that a religious person should seek transcendence makes a lot of sense. After all, why wouldn't we try to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the greatest possible way? And it's true we're limited over here. Why wouldn't we seek that transcendence? Why wouldn't we seek that dvekus? That's what we're going to explain. Three reasons. But first, Seth, your question.
Okay, I think Rebbe answered it to a certain degree already, but it's about that in practice, halachic man and homo religiosus are almost the same, meaning because of the fact that at the end of the day, they both want to do mitzvos. They might have a different goal, like Rebbe mentioned, but at the end of the day,
yes,
in practice,
they have a lot in common, for sure.
Also,
they both try to do mitzvos, but there's a big difference. It first of all, what like we just saw now, what are they thinking about when they're doing mitzvos? What are they longing for? How do they relate to this world? Do they try to separate from this world or do they try to elevate this world? But let's see, maybe this will be brought up. You're certainly correct that they have, in a sense, much more in common than they have apart. And sometimes when we talk about the in this way, we sort of highlight the contrasts so much that we fail to appreciate the commonality. And obviously, there's a lot in common. And obviously, there's room in our Mesorah for all these drachim and avodas Hashem. And obviously, as we talked about last time, everybody has aspects of both, right? There's nobody that's a only halachic man or only homo religiosus. You're going to be both. And you're meant to be both. And you're supposed to, in your own heart, unify them. So the reason, the purpose of sort of contrasting them and almost painting them in these extreme versions, which don't actually exist in the real world, is to better understand them. But the halacha lemaisa is, as you're saying, it is not like this. Okay, so why does halachic man reject the transcendent? What is his opposition to homo religiosus? Number one, page 41, he considers homo religiosus's position unethical. Homo religiosus, his glance fixed upon the higher realms, forgets all too frequently the lower realms and becomes ensnared in the sins of ethical inconsistency and hypocrisy. See what many religions have done to this world on account of their yearning to break through the bounds of concrete reality and escape to the sphere of eternity. They have been so intoxicated by their dreams of an exalted supernal existence that they have failed to hear the sighs of orphans, the groans of the destitute. There is nothing so physically and spiritually destructive as diverting one's attention from the world. Think about the famous story about the Alter Rebbe and the crying child that Rav Amital used to say, right? You go ahead, you're so involved in your meditations that you don't hear the baby crying. You don't pay attention to the needs of this world. You're closeted up in a monastery. And so you're not able to really help all those in need. And not only that, but as we'll see in a second, you don't even value their needs, because what are they worth? They're just olam hazeh. Somebody's hungry. Good, so fast. That's the opposite of what the Torah wants. So how does halacha deal with this? The Torah objectifies the subjective and the transient. Take a look, page 59 to 60. The halacha, which is to objectify religiosity, again, I'm skipping a little, through introducing the external act and the psychophysical deed into the world of religion. The intention accompanying the performance of a mitzvah appears in halacha illuminated by the light of objectivity and lawfulness. So let's try to explain a little bit. The Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Beis, Perek Lamed Aleph, that opinions do not last unless they are accompanied by actions that strengthen them. In other words, to achieve perfection, you need to fulfill religious acts or mitzvos. The Rambam writes, by carrying out all the details of the prescribed practices, right, the mitzvos with a diktukim behalacha, and repeating them continually, then you'll be filled with respect and reverence towards God, and bearing in mind who is with them, they will not perform their duty. Here, when we're rejecting homoreligiosis, like Seth actually just pointed out, we're not talking about the Alter Rebbe. We're talking about those who believe, and largely Christians, that an ideal religious person should not be involved in mitzvos, in deeds, in actions. They should be contemplative. They should be thinking about connecting to God. And if you do that, so you will not actually achieve that perfection that you seek. To achieve that perfection, you need to involve who we really are. And that relates to another aspect of halachic man, which I guess we'll have to get to later, the realistic perspective on the world and on human nature. So again, mitzvos internalize the values and beliefs that cannot be achieved without it. That's really what the Sefer Chinuch is all about. And that is what halachic man. And we'll just see one reflection of this from the Rav. This is a piece from Uvikashta Misham, which is so, so powerful. I guess I'll just read it in English. I gave it to you in both. Confining religious experience and existence to a purely spiritual framework deprives religion of its splendor and influence. Religiosity lacking an objective revelatory foundation, which obligates one in certain actions, cannot conquer the animal in man. Even if it assumes the guise of love of God and man, the subjective faith of which Paul of Tarsus spoke, right, meaning Christianity, cannot endure if it does not contain explicit commands to perform good deeds and to fulfill specific mitzvos, and doesn't always make sense of a sense or are countercultural. The Holocaust can serve as a proof of this. All those who spoke of love stood by silently and did not protest. Many of them even participated in the extermination of millions of human beings. It's not an accident that Christians and Christianity and Catholicism has so much blood in their hands, and blood in their hands that was spilled in the name of religion, because they don't have halacha. So how does halacha address this? It accepts that beliefs alone don't govern behavior. You could believe in justice, but be tempted to cheat. You could desire closeness to God, but given to temptation. You could soar like an angel on Yom Kippur, but become a base person after the fast is over. We're capable of self-deception, and without halacha, we fool ourselves. It's fascinating. Tosfos in Shabbos writes that mitzvos are meginos. They're megin. They're like wings. And I guess we're, you know, well, I guess we're out of time. So the goal, original plan was to finish Halachic Man after two shiurim and then have two shiurim on Kol Dodi Dofeik. But I'd forgotten that last week we didn't have shiur for Hanukkah. And after two shiurim, we didn't really quite do what I was hoping to do. And I think anyway, 1 week is not enough for all of you to learn Kol Dodi Dofeik. So I think what we're going to do is just stick with Halachic Man this Zman. Maybe we'll do Kol Dodi Dofeik next Zman. And so we'll have one more shiur on Halachic Man. We'll get through whatever we get through. We'll turn to another aspect of Halachic Man, a bunch of aspects that we didn't get to yet, especially the Koach of Chiddush and what does it mean to be Machadesh next time, Be'ezus Hashem. So again, we'll have one more shiur. If you haven't yet finished the Sefer, make sure you do. And as I said, I'm very happy to continue talking about it in person as well. So everyone should have a Freilich and Zos Chanukah and a good Shabbos and Mat Shatzlacha. And a B'siyata Dishmaya we will pick up next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos. Yes, Akiva, you have a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just don't, we were saying that the halachic man sees mitzvos in a similar way to the way that the Rambam describes in the Mor Nevuchim, that they're practically helpful for something else, which is a religious or like a state of mind or belief.
I didn't say that. What I said was, and I was quoting from Vikashta Misham, but I didn't get to this point in Halachic Man. I was about to, when we ran out of time. It's on, I was going to read from page 55 to 57. But the point of mitzvos is that they translate these feelings of subjective religious feelings into practical ways, into being mashlim, a person. I'll just read a little bit. Hanatiya yisodit, this is from, I'm reading the Hebrew now, but from Halachic Man, shel halacha hi lachzir et ha'ichut ha-subjektiviyut hadatit et tochen todat ish hadat ha-shofetet chish maher kigalei hayam umit nag geshet b'chof ha-ri'aliyot v'nishberet. Right? So he's depicting here the ocean, the waves of an ocean that are rising and breaking, and to translate those emotions into concrete objective reality. And that's what mitzvos do. Halacha objectifies religiosity. And it does that by introducing an external act and by making gedarim and placing things in their proper ways. And that turbulence that he's describing here, that the, of the waves, now becomes stabilized and everlasting. So it protects a person not just against the dangers of what we said before, ignoring those needy that are around them, or even by being swept away by religion and thereby becoming acting in an unethical way. And it translates them into very objective things. And
so let's
and
say a person
that, and I'll give a mashal from the Rambam himself. So the Rambam in Shmona Prakim addresses the question: would it be better to give $1 1,000 times, or to give $1,000 to tzedakah? So obviously, the first criteria has to be looking at the ani, and if what is better for the ani is to get $1,000 now, you don't start playing games. But assuming that's irrelevant, so then yes, the act of giving a dollar 1,000 times is going to be more transformative on the person than giving $1,000 once, and therefore it's more valuable.
Okay, so for the halachic man, let's say he does a religious act with the only kavana and intent he has is l'shem mitzvah, but he doesn't have these religious experiences that are or
I
that
don't know
emotional
if he's
state.
coming lafuke those. He's coming lafuke esoteric kavanos, maybe. But no, he's not denying the religious experiences. Adarabba, like we read about last time, there's a place for emotions and strong and passionate religious emotions, right? Go back again to the passage we read last week about how the Vilna Gaon used to dance on Simchas Torah, and how halachic man dances on Simchas Torah, right? How he would be during Hakafos. He would dance, clasp, sing, celebrate with enthusiasm,
Right.
and there was joy. All those are part of halachic man. He experiences emotions just in the proper place.
I guess then I'm asking, like, is emotion the primary and the halacha is just concretizing it, or is it the other way? Where the
Both.
okay.
Absolutely both. In other words, and it's something the Rav writes about a lot, actually, especially when he talks about Kiyum Shebelev and the like. As it goes in both directions. It the Maisa Shebeguf helps the Kiyum Shebelev, but and the Kiyum Shebelev is expressed through the Maisim Shebeguf, and you need both. So if you do the Maisim Shebeguf without the Kiyum Shebelev, it's meaningless. So you do the, especially with certain types of mitzvot like Avelos or Simchos Yantif for the like, right? Let's give an example of this, right? So the Rav raises an interesting shaila. This is in one of the Shiurim LeZecher Avi Mori. So he says, we know Chazal tell us that Yantif is mevatel Avelos because it's a stira to Avelos. So you could ask Akasha, why? All nihugei Avelos are fundamentally mutter on Yantif, right? There's no chiyuv to wear shoes on Yantif, so you can take off your shoes, right? You're allowed to eat meat. You're supposed to eat meat on Yantif, Simchas Yantif. An avel could eat meat and drink wine. So where's the stira? There's no stira. You could keep all of Hilchos Avelos, meaning the ritual practices of Avelos, without violating Dinei Yantif. So why is it a stira? So the answer is it's obvious it's a stira because Avelos and Simcha are opposites. So what was the kasha? So you say, oh, but halachic man has this kasha because halachic man says, what is Simchas Yantif? Oh, what it says in Shulchan Aruch, meat and wine. And what's a Hilchos Avelos? You know what it says in Shulchan Aruch, taking off your shoes and whatever it is. No, that's not halachic man. That's an
Right.
idiot.
So
Halachic man doesn't understand that what Simchas Yantif is, and Simchas Yantif isn't just meat and wine, it means Simcha, and understands what Avelos is. And the Nihugei Avelos without the Kiyum Shebelev are meaningless actions. So it's Pashut that it's not just about these actions in a dry way. That's not the belief of halachic man at all.
right, so I just always thought that halachic man was more along the lines of like I said last time that Rav Chaim saying that it was the Gzeiras HaMelech to create the world and there's no other reason, and the same would apply to halachos and mitzvos, and that the Rav describes Kiyum Shebelev and the Maisa. It's not a coincidence that the Rav was so excited about that, and that maybe that's coming from a place that isn't halachic man. It's more like hashkafa from halacha, more emotional, but in contrast to halachic
I
man.
disagree strongly. I mean, I you're correct that the Rav wasn't this pure halachic man, and but I disagree strongly. Adarabba, the Rav, when he writes that the philosophy of Judaism has to emerge from the halacha, he's telling you the philosophy of halachic man. Halachic man also is a philosophy. And what's the makor? The halacha, right? That's what halachic mind's all about. We're supposed to look at the halacha and develop a philosophy, and not the reverse. The objections to so many versions of Jewish philosophy that he had is that instead of looking at halacha as the source of Jewish philosophy, they try to come up with a Jewish philosophy outside of the halacha. But there is a Jewish philosophy, and it's one that emerges from the halacha, and that's something that halachic man sees.
Okay.
All right. Shkayach, yes.
Yeah, sorry. Just the very notion of halachic man, it seems to run so counter to, like, I get that he's trying to make the case and so, like, to make it, the purpose of the essay was in order to make, like, the, you know, observant Judaism, orthodoxy, appealing and, like, respectable in the eyes of a mostly non-observant audience, and even respectable. But, like, the emphasis on halacha and the rationality of bringing down transcendence into this world is just, like, it ignores so much of Chazal and Rishonim. Like, you're cutting out almost the entire, like, I get that there's a little bit of, like, controversy around, like, certain of these texts, but, like, all the Heichalos, like, anything like that, which I think the Gra took pretty seriously. I think Gibbon wrote a commentary on it. So, like,
yes.
To cut that all out, like, how is that, like, what's the, even the examples that he gives, for, like, there's examples and precedents. He gives Yaakov, he gives Eov as examples of homo religiosus, and says no prior examples of halachic man. So, like, that it's, innovative, like, yeah. Where's it coming from? And who gives him that right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. So I don't think he needs a right. I think that, I think you're right. But I don't think his purpose is to tell people to be this ideal halachic man. And he writes that explicitly. And like Akiva was just saying, that's not who he was. He didn't just write halachic man either. He wrote, I think that the point of the book is that by describing these typologies, even though they're not real people, you can better understand who you are and who you could become. So I don't see him rejecting anything. Just because he's saying that's not halachic man doesn't mean he's rejecting. The Gra is a great example of how he treats it. He has several stories about the Gra. So you'll say, oh, so clearly he thought the Gra was halachic man. He knew the Gra was a mekubal, and he knew what the Gra wrote. You know, that most of his writings are probably in Kabbalah, right? So he's not, I don't believe, in any way coming lafuke the Gra. I think he's helping you understand the godless of a certain type of avoda and a certain type of person. He's not rejecting. And I think that's very, very big difference. Let me give an example. If you have this chus of meeting and knowing a certain type of litvisha gadol, a mushlam person. So how do you relate to it? And if you haven't read Halachic Man, you don't understand why you won't see the godless of this person. You won't. You won't, and especially if you're coming from a place of where the focus is dvekus, and the focus is transcendence and the like, you won't understand the beauty of this person. And if you read Halachic Man, I think you will. I mean, maybe, if you have your eyes open. And you'll see the shlemus, b'chol minei shlemus of this person, and this derech and avoda. There's room in Torah for many different avodos. There are 12 shvatim, there are 12 pathways. There are many ways in which one could be Obed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which are 100% legitimate. And I don't think in halachic man, he's trying to reject any of those. He's not pushing down. He's building up. And he's building up a derech and avodas Hashem, which is the derech of his Mesorah. It's the derech of his father. It's the derech of his grandfather. It was a derech in avodas Hashem that is misunderstood. It's not appreciated. And it's something that, if better understood, can actually teach us a lot, and teach a lot even to the person who isn't, that isn't his derech. There's what to gain from it for everybody, even if that's not your derech. And I think he accomplishes both of those things in the Sefer. But I don't think it should be read as rejecting a different mahalich. But I'll give you a mashal. This isn't a perfect mashal. It's a very imperfect mashal, but maybe it's helpful anyway. Rav Kook writes about how, you know, why is it that the Rambam, Hashgacha had it, that the Rambam didn't have Kabbalah? You know, you could say, imagine how great the Rambam would have been if he had that as well. And the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, Rav Kook writes, to develop a certain mahalich in Avodas Hashem, a mahalich which is entirely rational, and a mahalich in which we can understand why we do what we do, and everything about Judaism can be explained in a rational way. Sometimes that means acknowledging you don't understand it, but that's also rational. It's rational to realize your limitations. Mm-hmm. And once that happened, like once the Rambam Udi'ime did that, so then there's no need that A, that couldn't have happened if he had the Kabbalah, and B, once it was done, so it didn't need to be done anymore. So there was no need to hide the Kabbalah from rationalists, and people were able to go ahead and say, I learned the Monavuchim, and I also believe in Kabbalah, and I could merge them, and Elu V'Elu. But you only get to the point of Elu V'Elu if at first glance, at first stage, there's a point where you only see your approach and you don't see the other approach. So, you know, as I said, Beisham and Beisilo. So we now believe Elu V'Elu. But it had to be for the perspective of Beishamai to develop that they couldn't see Beis Hillel. They had to see Beis Hillel's mahalich is wrong. And for Beis Hillel to develop, they had to see Beishamai is wrong. And once Beis Hillel developed and Beishamai developed, then we can go ahead and say, oh, Elu V'Elu, we could see both. So that's sort of before the fact. In Halachic Man, we're in a certain sense doing it after the fact, but we're saying, let's go ahead and try to better understand a certain derech in Avodas Hashem. And that derech could teach us something tremendously, whether we fully buy into it or we don't. I think that's what he's doing.
I hear. Also, one more thing. Where in the Mora does the Rambam have the line about that the actions are upholding the values and it's not going to, so it doesn't just fizzle out into non-actualization?
Yeah. As in a bunch of places, the one that I was quoting from was, oops, let me just. I closed all my things by accident.
Two thirty-one.
Okay. Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Okay. Good Shabbos.
Yes.
Shabbos.